out if you're gonna reach those arms out. Yeah? And how many people know this rule about doing the neck rolls, that you wanna be careful as you go back because you could just, it's a heavy, you have a heavy head. So if you're going around,
just half.
Sometimes half of it is good.
Yeah.
I love this one where you try to squeeze your ear against your shoulder. And then how many people are familiar with like a ragdoll stretch, like before singing? Many times we just ask students to lean over at the hips, okay? And really make sure you're letting that neck dangle. Don't hold it up like you're looking straight at the ground. Look at your knees instead. And then make sure those arms are loose, your back is released, and you just roll up vertebrae, butt by. Vertebrae. Until you feel comfortable, right? Basic singing posture is relaxed knees. Sometimes I don't know if this is sacrilegious, but so you can see me.
It's not.
I enjoy standing in like a modified ballet pose. Not this, but just modified so that I could move forward and be expressive if I wanted to. I could move back and put the weight on my thigh up here. I can move side to side. Can everybody try that posture? It's almost like you're on a surfboard, but smaller. Small surfboard. And it's real flexible. I think sometimes we get caught up, especially if we're communal singers, we get caught up in standing straight on, maybe with our legs together. Or legs just like this. Many times we're familiar with stand with your feet shoulder width apart, but we forget to try other positions. Maybe it's your left foot that's more comfortable in front. But find that comfortable place. And then just will you just buzz for me if you can, just right. Like you're just pouring that onto the table. Here we go. If you're a guy, maybe you switch up into that really super light voice up there. Just I'm trying to go to the basement this time, so it's extreme to range, but with nice, easy lip buzzes. And awesome. Good. So what do you think is comfortable about that? Can you describe what that feels like?
Lots of air flowing through.
Yeah. You feel energized, but relaxed at the same time. It's not a tense energy. Anybody have trouble lip buzzing with lip buzzes? Yeah? Is that something?
I pretend it a lot, though.
Oh, that's fine. Sometimes people say you can try a sort of trumpet mimicking, like, woo, or that sounds more like a saw or something, or a drill. Woo, yeah, a kazoo. But the idea that I've used with some people who have a difficulty with lip buzzes is to just hold their fingers lightly up the corners of their mouth. There's a muscle here called the orbicularis oris that helps work those lips, and they got to keep it loose. And so then if you try, right? That's a wonderful sound. It's just a wonderful sound. I love the lip buzz. It's one of the healthiest vocalizers there is, and that's, there's a major researcher called Ingo Titzeth, T-I-T-Z-E, in voice science, and he says that's the best exercise because it makes you stay loose. but you can feel lots of breath moving, right? I emphasized breath on Monday, how important that is, how air is the key to good singing tone and healthy tone. And so if you can start yourself with that before you do anything, that's
that
great.
Before the lectern, stand up there.
Yeah, it just loosens you all up. right into the microphone, right? But how many people sing in church choir? Yeah, you have, how early are your services that you sing for? 10. That's fine, that's comfortable. 9.
Yeah, but our rehearsals right before.
Oh, yeah, rehearsal like at 8 o'clock sometimes, right? We have an 8:30 a.m. service. And our choir director said that the chancel choir will never sing at that service. but in any case, even if you had to get up really early, right, the idea is to get your body energized for singing so you can really enjoy what you're doing. I stayed up really late last night talking to my chalet mates. I was really tired at 10 o'clock, but that's the exercise I started with, and now I hydrated too. I got some water in me. Some coffee, which was important, and now I feel energized. So that's one that I really love to start with. I mentioned Monday this issue of posture, not just in those feet getting aligned, but what else has to be aligned? Anybody remember?
Shoulders.
Hips and shoulders, right. So let's make sure you feel that alignment, right? And now put your finger in your belly button, and we're going to do some of those pulsating exercises. Let's just do the buzz still on. Good. See, bellies move. you want to feel like you're the Pillsbury Doughboy. You know how he gets like pushed through the belly button? You really want to feel like you're seeing that, okay? So this time, will you add some pitch to that? Okay? This is what I call the burr or buzz sniff exercise. So, I want us to hear. Does that make sense? Can you hear me sniff in between? Want to start there? Can you do the five notes up a half step too for us? Ready? Make sure you let go first to breathe. And. Switch things up as you get to the top just a little bit, lighten up. What else?
I felt the tummy going in and out.
Yeah? Did you feel it tighten just a little the farther you went? Try it this time. Yeah?
The higher you go, it tightens more, and it relaxes a little and tightens more going on.
Okay, see if you can keep that gentle tightening more steady. And especially as you get to an end of an exercise, or this would translate to an end of a phrase in a hymn, or end of a phrase in a choral piece you might sing, or solo piece, that little tug, you should be more and more aware of it, because it's what's balancing all the air rushing out being filtered by the vocal tract. Does that make sense? You need that gut tug to balance that air rushing out. So let's try it. Pay attention to gentle, consistent gut tug. Here we go. You feel it? Did you make yourself do it? Sometimes you can't just expect it to happen. You have to be a little more active, especially if you're not as familiar with that sensation. So good job. Have a seat real quickly. We're going to get to some songs in a minute, but I wanted to show you a couple of posters I did not bring the other day. This tugging that I'm talking about, it's an example of what vocal pedagogy experts call, or voice teachers call, muscular antagonism. So what does that mean? Just what do you think that means?
There's something that's trying to fight back.
Yeah, there's like two opposing forces, muscular forces, right? And this little picture on the bottom shows that pretty well. It shows you sort of an x-ray view of the diaphragm in there, that dome-shaped muscle, right? And then some oblique muscles that go through the abdomen that work to balance muscular pressure, okay? Which translates into some air pressures, like I was just saying, to balance what you're doing on higher notes or the ends of a phrase. That little bit of antagonism is really important. Can you see that there? Just how they describe that? Ouch. See that there? That's where we're feeling it. So you can imagine that's where I've been describing this, like 3 inches below the belly button, 3 inches in kind of sensation of deep gut tugging, okay? Also, as you experienced with this, the higher notes, yay, right? In order to not shout them, what did you have to do?
Consciously be quiet.
Think a little quieter, maybe? Okay, that's one way you could approach that. Anything else? Did you change the shape of your mouth at all?
Unconsciously,
right? You're making space for it to come out without tension. So I noticed myself, I would do wee, and I'm opening the higher I go, right? Or I'm letting go from this hinge right up here. So part of that, finding a consistent sound throughout your range, some of you may experience like an easy sound and rich sound in your lower range, and then when you go to try to sing high notes, it thins out, right? Or it sounds like a totally different voice. Yeah. Part of negotiating that break, that they call it sometimes, or that inconsistency, is to understand resonance. And I kind of left off there Monday, but I want to go into depth about it right now. So, resonance, again, is natural amplification. And we use a lot of this area of our face to achieve that. And I want you to practice one exercise for me. I call this the nair-nair sequence. Now, when you hear the word nair-nair, what do you think of?
Banjo.
Like, that's how we imitate a banjo sound, right? And it's kind of nasty and forward, right? I want you to make the ugliest, nastiest banjo imitation that you can on five notes down. Nair-nair-nair-nair-nair. Ready?
Nair-nair-nair-nair-nair.
At least if you're not not used to exaggerating that so much. Now I want you to slip an ah in there so that it's near, ah, near, ah, near. Okay, real, still ugly, but near, ah, near, ah, near. Here we go.
Near, ah, near, ah, near.
Middle of the tongue is the highest point. There's an ah. Okay? understanding that you're going to go E, A, A, O, U, that your tongue is going to change shape that way, and we did a little work with that before. So let's see what we can make happen on some hymns, all right? I picked a starting one for us, Blessed Assurance, which is number 638 in the ELW. And after we sing it, I'll ask you why I may have chosen this to work on some vocal concepts, okay? But also to have fun singing it. You want to give us a little intro one more? Swoosh, right? That's the kind of energy you want to send in breath from the first, this note you're currently singing to the second one that you're not quite singing yet. It's almost like you separate out that quick time that happens, right? And you think while you're on those repeated notes, I'm going to send that breath out before I sing the D, like a Nike swoosh. Should we try the third verse? And make sure, let's stand up this time, and remind yourselves to do the gut tug as you need to at the ends of phrases. I find hymn singing very difficult because much of the time it's in a lower tessitura for me, which means a lower area of my voice or area of pitches. And the phrases are long, and I have to use more air in a lower part of my range. So it's a good chance to practice some of that. And then also opening up and keeping that breath moving really in an energized fashion. Here we go. Verse 3. She's alive and everything, but it's just really a fun note. more traditional hymns or anything contemporary, when there are high notes, trying to get out of the way is a good thing. So that's a good lesson from this particular tune. Any questions at this point?
So how would you do that? A high E?
You stick that tongue forward like in this picture. You want the high point in the front. So everybody go like this, make ugly faces at me. Right, but some of you are doing this. Did I stick my tongue over my teeth or lip? No, it's always, it's like magnetized to the back of your bottom teeth. Try this for me. Don't move that tip of the tongue. Rest the back. Communicate with me with the writing pad, and that was, she was practicing good voice rest. avoiding clearing your throat or coughing habitually, yelling or screaming, as mentioned, is the one way to avoid abuse. Avoid talking over long distances. So maybe the exercises we did with speech levels wouldn't be something you'd want to do all the time. But I can imagine coaches, right, having to get people's attention farther away down the field. Paul Olson, many of you may know who is the coordinator of our teaching staff, is a track and cross-country coach at Augustana, where we teach. And he told me he had a vocal fold hemorrhage once, which is when blood vessels pop in the vocal fold. And so he had to work through that inability to speak easily. And that comes from some compounded issues, but speaking over long distances. I notice myself, noisy situations, or machinery is that word. I get really tired talking in the dining hall here. Mm-hmm. Does anybody else notice that? Mm-hmm. I mean, not only am I fighting the dry climate, but I'm talking a lot, meeting people, and there's a lot of noise in there. So, you know, just everything in moderation, right? As Lutherans tend to say, right? Don't sing outside of comfortable pitch and loudness ranges. So, this is where choosing the most comfortable voice part in your church choir, for example. I shouldn't sing alto all the time, but I do. I don't sing in choir very often anymore. Anyway, I'm more of a soloist, but I choose alto because then I don't have to modify my singing technique too much so I don't stick out, right? Because my vibrato will come into play and then it'll just be this interesting sound. But I have to watch it. I can't sing alto all the time, or I'll start getting some hefty tension going on. So that's an example of that, of this. Does anybody know who that rock star is? Brian Adams?
No.
From the, he was really popular in the 80s and early 90s, I think. But I put him up there because he's showing a little bit of this neck tension that we want to avoid, right? And that's a symptom of misuse. If he just learned how to use his voice and his body better, it would work. So not tightening up our chest, shoulders, and throat to help you breathe or to push the voice out, right? That's not where the power comes from. Where does the power come from? Yes, your gut. Be conscious of your speaking habits. Avoid tension in your body while you speak. Does anybody notice ever that even when you're not speaking, that you could be sitting there and you're like clenching your jaw? Yeah, that's a really tough habit to break, but it's helpful if you sing at all, because to break it, because you don't need that extra tension building up in a joint that is used a lot in singing, right? You gotta open that mouth. So using air, like I've mentioned, and if you sing, don't force your voice to stay in the register beyond its comfortable pitch range. So, like, guys having to sing tenor in choir because there's no other tenors, but they're really a baritone, right, can develop some poor habits that lead to just misuse. Just some reminders of healthy lifestyles. Rest, diet, hydration, and this is decreasing stress levels with yoga. And then don't demand more of your voice than you would of the rest of your body. Don't use your voice extensively when you have a cold or when you feel tired or your voice is strained. It just compounds problems. Don't ignore symptoms of vocal strain, hoarseness, pain, fullness, heartburn, or allergies. Someone once mentioned gastroesophageal reflux disease the other day. Or reflux is the common term for it, where acid from the stomach comes up and irritates the mucosa around the larynx, and it makes it really difficult to sing for any prolonged period of time. That kind of symptom, if you don't know you have reflux, you gotta get checked out or find a way to minimize that acid so that you can sing as you want to.
I think a difficulty is that when people come to church, they use more perfume, and if you have a perfume allergy, it's torture.
Yeah, 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 there are some situations that are hard to avoid,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But it's thankfully we do have some medication that helps us deal with those allergy symptoms. And of course, not exposing ourselves to excessive pollutants is good health practice anyway, but cigarette smoke and chemical fumes. Just a reminder, I guess I'm into equal signs. A reminder that singing equals joy in our lives and in the lives of others, but also vocal health equals vocal freedom, which equals joy in my book. Any questions so far? Yeah.
You say not to sing beyond your range. What do you do when your voice has dropped about 4 notches like mine the last 5-10 years?
That's interesting that you say that, because there's research that shows that for men, with aging, the voices tend to rise just a little bit, and women go the opposite. It's like the great equalizer is aging, the aging process, right?
Well, he's weird. We know that.
That's okay. I think it also depends on what voice type you were before you went through a lot of aging process. Because I've noticed in the 60 to 70 year olds that I've taught that were always low basses, they just stay there. Or they may get lower, right? But that's anecdotal, kind of. I haven't done a scientific study on that or anything. So I think what you do is you do what you can do, but you can also continue to work on these vocal technique ideas so that the top may loosen up just a little bit. Or you use a different technique than you might have used before that actually helps you, you know, maybe that other technique was hindering the top.
What happens to me, which is probably wrong, is tending to go down into the bass then instead.
Oh, you drop down an octave or something? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That can be tough. How many people know women who sing tenor?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or you're one of them? Right. I think it's a really interesting phenomenon in a sense, because every instrument is different. We all are built differently. Our vocal folds are different thicknesses, which contributes to what voice part you are, right? The thicker it is, the lower your range and the lower voice part you would be. But women singing down there, I think they have to be careful. Are they singing down there because that's who they are, or is it because they're afraid to try the higher notes on, you know?
They
need tenors. I know, we have to make these choices, right? So, you know, if you can share that responsibility, maybe like it doesn't have to be the same woman all the time that has to go down there. Finding creative solutions, I think, is part of dealing with some of these kinds of changes.
My dad was the choir director, so he had me singing tenor a lot.
Oh, yeah.
There's a shortage of tenors, I think, almost everywhere.
Yeah, actually, our choir director at Augustana, the lead choir director, he complains about that. He's like, he complains about basses, because once we help students free up their instruments, right, then they end up having these bigger ranges, and sometimes if you're only focused on training the top voice, you forget about the bottom. They don't rise like that, but well-trained tenors or people that don't know that they're a tenor is uncommon. Yeah. Other questions? You were going to say something.
Well, I just suspect that cigarette smoking must thicken the vocal cords. So many people women who are singing tenor are smokers.
Smokers? Oh, maybe. Well, you hear a smoker's voice, right?
Mm-hmm.
That garbly. Is the David the ENT here? What do you
want to
say about all that?
Oh, yeah, a couple of things. As far as the aging voice in men, you're both right in that the fundamental frequency of the vocal fold does go up as we age, especially men, but the resonance chamber also changes. And so, you know, senior men's voices tend to be more resonant. And the reason for that is that cartilage actually grows. Starting at about age 60, 70 or so in men, cartilage gets bigger. And we all know this by simply looking at a picture of yourself when you're 20 and look at a picture of yourself when you're 70. Look at the nose and the ears.
Mm-hmm.
You actually have an enlargement of cartilage.
Mm-hmm.
And that same thing happens in the voice box, the larynx, which is made of cartilage after all. And so as that cartilage, as that larynx grows, it actually stretches the vocal cord a little bit, and fundamentally the pitch goes up, but so too does that resonance increase.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? I would love to have you add to all of this talk.
Well, yeah, yep. Well, another thing about reflux that's really poorly understood, in my own practice, I deal with this on an almost daily basis. But reflux, the whole concept of reflux is really different to an ENT doctor than it is to a gastroenterologist or to what we think of as heartburn. Because we all think of reflux as that Pepto-Bismol commercial, you know, that heartburn and the feeling in our chest. Well, reflux in adults, the most common symptom is a foreign body sensation, what we call a globus pharyngeus. So it's just, doc, there's something in my throat. Don't come in and tell me, there's something in my throat, I know this. And there's nothing there but irritation from reflux. And so we call that laryngopharyngeal reflux, where the reflux actually comes into the throat, but really bypasses the esophagus altogether in terms of symptoms. So we have hoarseness and a foreign body sensation. And then that leads to then the vocal overabuse and mm-hmm. our own minds pushing our voice boxes farther than they should go.
Mm-hmm. So. Great. So I'm going to show them some clips of nasty pathology. It's exciting, isn't it? I just love this. We do a chamber choir festival in the, every fall, and I love showing these pictures to high school kids because they're just crazy about it. They just react crazily. But let me get out of here and get to that.
David, can you comment about the effects of smoking on the vocal folds?
Well, smoking is very similar to perfume in that it's, it was alluded to earlier. No one actually is allergic to cigarette smoke. No one is actually allergic to perfume, for very rare exceptions. What we have are sensitivities to it, and the sensitivity will cause swelling, and you know, I guess for all practical purposes, the end product is irritation, but it goes down a different biochemical pathway. But we essentially have swelling of the vocal cord, and the same kind of thing occurs where we push the vocal cord beyond what it should.
So you can see the little example here. I'm just going to show you example 8. Video of large nodules. Nodules are like calluses on the vocal fold, correct, Dave? You can summarize how they happen, maybe. Misuse?
Yeah, nodules are a little different than polyps. Nodules occur because the vocal fold has a point of contact at the back. I didn't know what I mean.
I know, it's all right.
You see your vocal cord, and it has these two processes that stick up, you know, cartilage called the arytenoids. And they slam together when we make the voice. Again, there's a point of contact right in the back, and that repeated point of contact, especially if exacerbated by cigarette smoke, perfume, or reflux, will tend to get irritated. And then just like banging your elbow, you'll get repeated irritation on the same spot, and eventually you'll grow a callus, and even worse as you get
irritation. Yeah. So I like this because you can listen to what happens. Get that back there. Come on. See how it's not clean and straight, those vocal folds?
Yeah. Oh. You okay? No.
Kind of a dark blood in the middle of it. You can also just have ones that are clean.
these removed or cysts are removed or both or?
Well, sometimes, if it gets severe enough, we always give anti-reflux medications, at least 3 months of voice therapy at least, and only reluctantly operate.
Oh, I forgot to mention, you mentioned when we were talking about vocal arrest, sometimes also they go through voice therapy with speech pathologists, right, to relearn how to make sounds efficiently. So that's another part of therapy. But you don't do that when you have regular laryngitis. Where's the sound? Oh. Jerry, now we lost the sound. Oh, there we go.
That's a real touchy chord.
Church music this past fall, who had maybe a series of infections, I think, and one morning he woke up with vocal fold paralysis. And so his whole entire teaching career was this kind of whispered tone. I mean, he had to force himself to speak, right? But somehow it was very quiet.
You can oftentimes deal with that surgically, but if it's both sides, then it's dropped very.
I lost my voice when I was teaching preschool. And I was quiet. You know, all the children were also quiet. It was amazing.
Interesting. Any other questions?
What about drinking up there? Does alcohol affect vocal cords?
Yeah, it's dehydrating. Okay. So remember I said Monday, there's a layer of gelatin around that's protectant. Right, so if you are dehydrated, then that is less gelatinous, and then you're running the risk of this kind of constant irritation.
You mentioned coffee earlier. That's kind of a
dehydration. Yeah, too much of a good thing is never good, right? So, but like I said Monday, some singers get really hung up on all of these possibilities, right, of things going wrong. But you have to live your life and you have to enjoy what you're doing. But if you have healthy habits and you understand your instrument, you know, then I think you're going to be okay. You just have to understand yourself.
How about drinking ice water as opposed to like just...
like tepid?
Yeah.
Does that make a difference? It doesn't make a difference.
Yeah. Relaxation makes the biggest difference. You're right. And people get so wound up that that becomes pathology.
Yeah.
Anxiety about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know some tenors who want to drink ice water.
Yeah.
Because it gives them that extra little pull. That's what.
Huh. It's probably, I think
it's
many,
psychosomatic.
There's so much in singing that that's psychological. And I mean, it makes sense that it is because it's someone's like innermost like ability, right? It's who they are inside, how they can express themselves, and they get really wound up about it.
The emotional
connection.
The brain, like the best singer, it's the emotional quality that attracts you. Like they said, Marian Anderson used to get out of tune, but that emotional quality was
right. I always say to students, you know, your goal is to sing in tune, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And to sing expressively, but you can get away with a bum note if you are committed to the text, the dynamic, all everything, if your emotional delivery is there.
Speaking, reading.
All right.
About drinking milk before performance.
Oh, you want to address the milk issue?
The milk issue. Well, allergists will swear that there is no milk allergy. It's very, very rare. But I have within my own family someone that completely loses her voice if she has too much ice cream or chocolate. And so,
it probably just causes a reaction in the body, like, to either create, like, the complaint a lot is of times is it does a lot of mucus after
phlegm, right.
Yeah. Right? And so that gets in the way. I mean, if you end up having to clear your throat to get rid of it kind of thing, then that's getting in the way of your singing. Also, dry environments, I noticed myself, I was coughing the other day at the end of my session because I got so dry, and that's an irritant too. So
there's a medicine called Mucinex.
Yeah.
That's as long as you take it in high enough doses, as per on the box, then it thins out the mucus very, very nicely. As long as you drink plenty of water, because that's what's not really said on the box of the Mucinex. You need to really drink water so that you feel like you're urinating all the time.
someone asked that on Monday about mucus. What was the medicine? I said it's guaifenesin.
Yeah,
that helps.
Mucinex is the
medicine.
Right, that thins everything out. So.
Excellent stuff.
Yeah. Well, I heard the bell, so I think we better cut our